Tervetuloa Totuusradion pariin. Tämänkertainen lähetys on nimeltään Olette liittyneet naisten vallankumoukseen ja se käsittelee Kurdistanin naisten vapautusliikettä. Lähetys on aivan alkumetrejä lukuun ottamatta englanninkielinen. Ennen lähetyksen varsinaiseen aiheeseen menoa käsitellään lyhyesti kuitenkin vallitsevaa koronaviruksen leviämiseen liittyvää poikkeustilaa. Tämä osio lähetyksestä on suomeksi. Welcome to listen to Totuus Radio. After reading the five theses on the coronavirus published by Antifascist Network, VARIS, we will continue with evening's main topic, Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. The part considering coronavirus is in Finnish. Antifasistinen VARIS-verkosto julkaisi keskiviikkona 18.3. samana päivänä, kun eduskunta vahvisti hallituksen päätöksen asettaa valmiuslaki voimaan, viisi teesiä koronasta. Luen ne teille tässä. Teesien johdannoksi todetaan seuraavaa. Kuten minkä tahansa kriisin aikana, myös epidemian iskiessä yhteiskunta joutuu valitsemaan suuntansa. Kiristämmekö kontrollia vai pyrimmekö kriisin yli rakentamalla yhteisvastuullisempaa ja kestävämpää yhteiskuntaa? Meille antifasisteille, feministeille ja antikapitalisteille vastaus on selvä. Koronaviruksen taakan tasainen jako on ainoa kestävä tapa torjua epidemia kaikilla yhteiskunnan tasoilla, ja ihmisten välinen keskinäinen avunanto on olennainen osa kestävää epidemian torjuntaa. Tästä syystä olemme koonneet seuraavat viisi teesiä epidemian yhteiskunnallisesta ja poliittisesta luonteesta sekä aloitteista, jotka vievät kriisin yli kohti vapaata, tasa-arvoista, solidaarista ja ekologista yhteiskuntaa uusien terveys- ja talouskriisien sekä poikkeustilojen sijaan. Ensimmäinen teesi. Kaikkien terveys turvattava. Maksuton kunnallinen terveydenhuolto, mukaan lukien tarpeelliset lääkkeet, hygieniatarvikkeet ja mielenterveyspalvelut, on turvattava kaikille Suomessa asuville kaikkina aikoina kansalaisuudesta riippumatta. Koronaviruspandemia koskettaa ihmisiä ympäri maailmaa, mutta reaktiossa siihen näkyy paikallisten yhteiskunnallisten erojen lisäksi myös globaali eriarvoisuus. Tästä syystä solidaarisuuden on ulotuttava myös kansallisvaltioiden rajojen yli, tarjoamalla osaamista ja tukea myös muihin maihin, missä niitä tarvitaan. Esimerkiksi tutkimustiedot, patentit, mahdolliset rokotteet ja lääkkeet on laitettava maksuttomaan jakoon alueille, joilla on heikompi terveydenhuoltojärjestelmä. Terveydenhuoltoalalla työskenteleville, erityisesti sairaanhoitajille ja lähihoitajille, on maksettava heidän työnsä arvokkuutta ja tärkeyttä vastaava palkka. Epidemia ei saa olla veruke sivuuttaa sairaanhoitajien jo keväällä voimistuneita vaatimuksia parempaan toimeentuloon ja työolosuhteisiin, joita suurin osa suomalaisista tuki. Päinvastoin, tavallistakin suuremman paineen, stressin ja henkilöstöpulan alla työskentelevät ammattilaiset ansaitsevat korotuksen peruspalkkaansa ja reilut lisät poikkeustilanteessa työskentelystä. Toinen teesi. Kaikkien toimeentulo turvattava. Kaikkien Suomessa elävien toimeentulo on turvattava kaikkina aikoina. Kriisirahastot on käytettävä ihmisten ja yhteiskunnalle tärkeiden toimintojen tukemiseen, ei suuryritysten, vakuutusyhtiöiden tai pankkien tekohengittämiseen. Koko kansalaisyhteiskunnan on järjestäydyttävä sitä silmällä pitäen, ettei vuoden 2008 jälkeisen talouskriisin hoidon verukkeella tehtyä massiivista tulonsiirtoa köyhiltä rikkaille tulla sallimaan toistamiseen. Yhteiskunnalle tärkeimpien töiden tekijöille, työvelvoitteen alla työskenteleville ja koronavirusta vastaan kamppaileville ihmisille muun muassa sairaanhoidon, päivähoidon, koulutuksen ja vanhustenhoidon piirissä on kamppailtava heidän työnsä tärkeyttä vastaava palkka ja työolosuhteet. Monet jatkavat töissä taloudellisen epävarmuuden takia, vaikka olisivat altistuneet virukselle tai tuntisivat olonsa sairaaksi. Myös freelancereiden, nollatuntisopimuksella työskentelevien, lomautettujen, työttömien ja pienyrittäjien toimeentulo on turvattava sekä kotitalouksien lainat jäädytettävä kategorisesti. Käytännöllinen ratkaisu toimeentulon turvaamiseen voi olla vastikkeeton, riittävän suuri perustulo, joka myös keventäisi nykyisen tukijärjestelmän byrokraattista kuormitusta. Asunnon, sähkön ja veden kaltaisten elämän edellytysten maksullisuudesta on luovuttava. Lisäksi on varmistettava, että asunnottomat ja muut jo valmiiksi hyvin haavoittuvassa asemassa olevat selviävät poikkeustilanteesta, eikä ketään häädetä kodistaan kriisin seurauksena. Kolmas teesi. Naisten asema turvattava. Kaikenlainen uusintava työ, kuten hoito, hoiva tai tunnetyö, on yhteiskunnassamme valtaosin naisten ja muun sukupuolisten harteilla. Siten myös yhteiskunnan sektorit, joilla on suuri tartuntariski, ovat pääosin naisvaltaisia. Tämä epäkohta on purettava. Hoivatyön ja muun uusintavan työn määrä ja arvokkuus on nähtävä ja tunnustettava, oli kyseessä sitten palkallinen tai palkaton työ. Tämä edellyttää sitä, että miehiltä vaaditaan tasapuolista vastuuta näistä tehtävistä. Jos institutionaalista päivähoitoa ja kouluja ajetaan alas, on luotava vaihtoehtoisia tapoja järjestää nämä toiminnot, ettei niiden hoitaminen kasaudu patriarkaaliseen ydinperheeseen, jossa naiset ovat perinteisesti hellan, lasten, pyykkikoneen ja nyt myös koronan välissä. Tässä on ehdottomasti otettava huomioon naisten keskinäiset erilaiset asemat yhteiskunnassa, liittyen erityisesti luokkaan ja rotuun. Vaatimukset hoivatyön ja muun uusintavan työn tasapuolisesta jakautumisesta on ulotettava kaikille elämän osa-alueille. Kaikessa yhteiskunnallisessa töiden ja tehtävien jakamisessa on otettava huomioon sukupuolinäkökulma, jottei naisia aseteta asemaan, jossa on suurempi tartuntariski, enemmän kontrollia tai työvelvoitteita tai vähemmän palkkaa. Miesten väkivalta naisia kohtaan saattaa kasvaa näinä aikoina, ja päihdeongelmista kärsivissä talouksissa asuville eristys ulkomaailmasta voi olla täysin sietämätön sekä uhka hengelle ja terveydelle. Naisten talojen ja turvakotien toimintaa on laajennettava epidemiatilanteessakin, ja niille sekä kriisiapua tarjoaville linjoille on tarjottava apua ja resursseja. Neljäs teesi. Ympäristö turvattava kaikille. Kaikissa kriisitoimenpiteissä on otettava huomioon toimien ympäristövaikutukset. Koronaviruksesta seurannut kriisi on lähtökohtaisesti ratkaistava tavalla, joka parantaa elinolosuhteitamme, ei tuhoa niitä. Erityisesti tämä on otettava huomioon talouspolitiikassa. Ympäristölle tuhoisia yrityksiä ei tule yrittää pelastaa, vaan tukipaketit ja kriisiapu on keskitettävä ekologisesti ja sosiaalisesti kestävän tuotannon tukemiseen. Esimerkiksi lentoliikennettä ei ole syytä palauttaa koronavirusta edeltäneelle tasolle. Viides teesi. Demokratia ja vapaus turvattava kaikille. Kaikki poikkeustilan nojalla asetetut kontrollitoimet ja rajoitukset on purettava välittömästi, kun ne eivät enää ole koronavirusepidemian kehityksellä perusteltavissa. On kamppailtava sen puolesta, ettei poikkeustilan rajoituksista tule uutta normaalia. Ihmisten vapaa liikkuvuus on turvattava ja pakolaisuuskysymys ratkaistava ihmisarvoa kunnioittavalla tavalla. Esimerkiksi pakolaisleirit Kreikassa, jossa edes perushygieniaa ei voida välttävästi tarjota tuhansille ihmisille, on evakuoitava ja purettava välittömästi, ja niiden asukkaat saatettava terveydenhuollon ja asumisen piiriin. Jos Kreikan pakolaisleirien 40 000 henkilöä jaettaisiin kaikkien EU-maiden kesken, minkään yksittäisen maan osuus ei olisi suuri. Kriisitilannetta ei saa käyttää demokratian ja vapauksien kaventamiseen. Päinvastoin, demokraattista itsehallintoa on lähdettävä luomaan kaikille yhteiskunnan osa-alueille, mukaan lukien työpaikoille. Paikalliset ja itsehallinnolliset rakenteet kasvattavat yhteisöjen ja yhteiskunnan joustavuutta, resilienssiä ja kykyä selviytyä koronavirusepidemiasta ja sen mahdollisista seurannaiskriiseistä. Kriisinhallinnan avuksi on luotava paikallistason demokraattisia rakenteita poikkeustilalainsäädännön sijaan, sillä paikallisyhteisöillä on valtiota parempi tuntemus ihmisten tarpeista ja ongelmista. Hajautettu itsehallinto takaa keskitettyä valtaa nopeamman ja joustavamman päätöksenteon ja reagointikyvyn ihmisten materiaalisiin tarpeisiin. Loppukaneettina viidestä teesistä todetaan näin. Jokainen näistä teeseistä on avoin kutsu kehittää analyysiä epidemian poliittisesta ja yhteiskunnallisesta luonteesta pidemmälle sekä kutsu järjestäytyä kamppailuun näiden ehdotusten avaamilla linjoilla niitä hioen ja kehittäen. Terveys, talous, naisten asema ja ekologia sekä vapauden ja demokraattisen itsehallinnon laajentaminen ovat alueita, joilla on järjestäydyttävä ja kamppailtava arvojemme, yhteiskuntamme ja elämämme puolesta. Nämä teesit eivät hahmottele päämäärää, vaan asemaa, josta lähteä liikkeelle ja avata uusia horisontteja. Yhteiskunnallinen todellisuus, joka epidemian, karanteenien ja suljettujen rajojen jälkeen avautuu, riippuu kyvystämme järjestäytyä rakentamaan tulevaisuuttamme vapauden ja tasa-arvon pohjalta. Monia asioita voimme ja meidän tuleekin vaatia, mutta tulevaisuutemme meidän on luotava itse, omilla ponnistuksillamme yhdessä, toisiamme tukien. Nämä olivat siis Varisverkoston 5 teesiä, joita verkosto tarjoaa lähtökohdiksi kriisiin suhtautumiselle. Voinette tarttua kutsuun kehittää analyysiä eteenpäin. Mutta siirrytään nyt itse lähetyksen aiheeseen, eli Kurdistanin naisten vapautusliikkeen pariin. Tervetuloa. Olette liittyneet naisten vallankumoukseen. After the music, we will continue in English with Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. Welcome. You have joined the Women's Revolution.
Sultana gördün serkeşim, cilana desmanı. flebus de schöne berbe jura jur ven oberen gianande dem heren desim schitten aben epirpir deren gösterim ole ki şükür okan ava dekim derivi işler be
This song tells, with very poetical ways, about going to the mountains, following the heart of wild animal, and flying with your dreams. Fighting for Rojava, all becoming the leaders of the dance with colorful scarves in their hand. Instead of traditionally giving the decision-making to the hands of man's family, now it is given to the hands of woman's family. But at the same time, the song tells story of losing your loved ones. How Rojava has become a handmill of sorrows. How the way towards our dreams sometimes means walking underneath the rain. Walking the path that is dark and unknown. And how moon looks everything with astonishment. While stars are flowing out from our eyes. And how hard it is to let go. Destemin zitenabe. I know I need to go now, but my hands still want to keep hold of you. So, I will build a house from small stones for you. Door made of tulips. Roof of pearls. And there, my light will be your shadow. And I continue, following our dreams. This song is called Nivista Gerilla, Amulet of Gerilla, and it is composed by Mehmut Berazzi. With this rather long introduction, welcome to listen to Totuus Radio. My name is Aura Kalli, and you are on a frequency of Radio Moreeni, 98.4. This evening's broadcast is called You Have Joined the Women's Revolution, and it is a continuation of the last year's last program called You Have All the Right to Protect Your Surroundings. This time, broadcast is in English, and yes, we are talking about Rojava, Kurdistan, and especially about Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. Autonomous Administration of Northeast Syria, also known as Rojava, is based on a theory of democratic confederalism. It has its basis on three main pillars: direct democracy, ecology, and women's liberation. The area established its autonomy in 2012, and it has been one of the rare areas in Middle East where people from different ethnicities and religions have lived more or less in a balance with each other, although ISIS or Daesh and Turkey have attacked to different places on the area several times. Last attack and occupational war started last October 2019 by Turkey and its jihadist proxies, causing a severe humanitarian crisis on the area and hundreds of thousands of people fleeing from their homes. The war has been dirty in many ways. Chemical weapons have been used, women have been executed with most brutal ways, and there has been attacks against civilians and also medical personnel. In spite of all the circumstances and misery caused by Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan and his allies, Rojava, continues to inspire so many people in and outside of the autonomous area. Sometimes the burden of getting inspired with so heavy costs feels almost unbearable, but I would say it obligates us even more to dream about our own utopias, organize ourselves, and of course, being in solidarity with Rojava. Rojava gives us sparks of hope and shows that it is possible to live in other kind of relations with each other than just capitalistic, stational, or patriarchal ones. It is time to start talking about, as some of you already have, what all this means to us in our lives and in our circumstances. I was fortunate to have an interview with Heval Vian. She is a member of European Genealogy Committee, and she will now tell us about one of the democratic confederalism's main principles, women's liberation, or more specifically, about Kurdistan women's liberation movement. So, close your eyes and let your imagination fly while listening to Heval Vian. I hope you get inspired and also find something to criticize with. And then maybe we can bring our thoughts, ideas and dreams together with our comrades, friends and closest ones, while utopias are a bit difficult to put up alone.
So my name is Vian. I am a European internationalist. I have been a member of the anarchist movement here in Europe since my early young years. And after the war in Kobane of the Kurdish people against Daesh in 2014 in Rojava, I got interested on the struggle there, on the revolution going on for equal society, for democratic confederalism and the liberation of women. And I decided to participate in that revolution and to go to Rojava and learn from that experience by myself. And there I was participating and working with the Kurdish women's movement, with the confederal structures of the women's movement and with the genealogy. And since then, in the way back to Europe, I'm a member of the genealogy committee here and doing the genealogy works in this part of the world.
First, I asked Heval Vian to tell why women's liberation is seen so important in Rojava's democratic confederalism.
This is a really important question and also a really long question to answer, because most of us as Europeans and internationalists, when we got to know the Rojava Revolution, it was difficult to understand how it could happen that so many women were joining this revolution, were joining the fight against fascism. And sometimes we were having also making the mistake of looking at this in a really European-centric way and emptying their struggle from ideology. And when we went there and when we got to know the movement by ourselves, we understood that this has been a really long and a really hard struggle that these women have done inside their own movements, against the patriarchal structures and the sexist mentality inside their own movement. This is a struggle that started more than 30 years ago, especially led by the revolutionary women in the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, that was formed in the late 70s in the part of Kurdistan in Turkey, in the state of Turkey. These few women that started to participate in this new revolutionary group, with the aim of liberating Kurdistan from the occupation of the different states under which they have been colonialized. They started to open also a perspective that it was going beyond of a typical national liberation of creating a state for a Kurdish people. But they were questioning that there was not only the oppression of the colonization to Kurdistan, but that they were also having an oppression as women in the Kurdish society, a conservative society, really diverse, of course, but with a really strong patriarchal structures. And this was really clear when they started to participate in the armed struggle started by the PKK in the 80s, and with the behavior that the male comrades in the guerrilla struggle, they were showing towards them. So these women, they were starting to question this. They, with their effort, with their own example, opened the way to this discussion, to question the traditional roles also still in the revolutionaries, like still in these socialists, and also to question, therefore, the whole paradigm of the national liberation struggle and the creation of a socialist state. And something that is really important to point out is the role of Abdullah Öcalan, that is the ideological leader of the Kurdish movement and also the leader of the PKK of the party, because he was one of the few men inside the party that they were supporting this idea, and that with his own experience inside this Kurdish society, he was also like giving an ideological and theoretical explanation to all these experiences that they were happening inside the party. So with this, after many years and many contradictions and inside the struggles, really hard struggles they were telling us, the women were achieving more space inside the guerrilla. Like, we have to understand that all this was happening during a war, a really hard war. We are talking about the 80s, the 90s, in Kurdistan, in the area of Turkey, of Syria, of Iran, Iraq. And the women were fighting this double war. They were fighting against the occupation of their land. They were fighting against an army occupation. But at the same time, they were fighting about this conservative position of their male comrades, that they were not letting them to go to the actions, that they were not letting them to participate actively in the armed struggle, but just to be part of the logistics and the typical like female works that they were naming. Or like they were appearing a lot of problems with relationships inside the party. So it was recognized that these patriarchal behaviors and these sexist approaches were the most counter-revolutionary positions. Like, this could like throw to the trust any effort of the revolution. It could really break an organization. And there were a lot of women like that, they were being a really big example inside this war, inside this struggle. They fell martyrs, they gave their life in the struggle, and they saw great courage, and they saw a new identity of a revolutionary woman. So they were becoming models, example for the rest of the women struggling inside this revolutionary movement. And it was seen the necessity to discuss about what does it mean to be a free woman, what does it mean to be a free man. It's just not enough to say that we are revolutionaries or we are socialists, because we are reproducing these behaviors in every day, especially in the relations between men and women. It was really clear there in the mountains of Kurdistan during the guerrilla. So from then, Öcalan, being as the leader of the party, he was pushing these discussions. They were doing a lot of analysis of the society, how was the relation with their families, which kind of behaviors were they were reproducing. They were trying to explain these situations in a sociological way. Like, okay, how all this mentality of the system is affecting our mentality. So they approach this in an ideological way and not in a personal way. Like problems of two people, of relation of two people, of like problems of an individual, but that this is a social problem, that this is a political and ideological problem. And it was really hard, they told us. It was not something easy. We are talking like the guerrilla was formed in the 84, and the first time that it was allowed to have autonomous only women's guerrilla units is in the 93. We are talking about almost 10 years of guerrilla struggle until the woman could achieve this. All these developments of these really strong ideological discussions, like of what does it really mean to be a revolutionary? What does it really mean to be free? For the woman, it was clear. They were leaving their houses, their families in Kurdistan, not only because of fighting for the freedom of their people, but they were wanted to liberate themselves from this already written destiny that patriarchy has said to us, like it was like to get married, to have children for the rest of their lives. So with this strong will of freedom, these women were going to those mountains. So it was clear that the fight of the woman was going deeper than the one of the men, because there was a stronger desire for freedom. They were living in a double slavery. And all that was really inspiring a new way of thinking in the party, and giving this more and more important role, bringing this role of surface of a woman's liberation perspective in the party. So with all these experiences, the women in the guerrilla, like we are talking really all the time that this is one of the strongest decades, the 90s, of war. There in this part of Kurdistan, like thousands of guerrilla fighters, they fell martyrs. Thousands were joining, so it's a really hard time. But at the same moment, they had the strength to discuss this. And they never said, we are going to postpone this when the revolution is done. We are not going to postpone this when the war is over. We want our utopia right now. We want to be free right now. And this is something that we can learn really. Is something really important to learn from them. Like in the hardest situation, this woman said, like, we are not going to postpone this. We are not going to accept this. We are not going to live like we were living in our houses. And then they were creating the first autonomous organizations inside the movement, the middle of the 90s. They were developing a new ideology. They were developing new theories. And from every experience that they were having inside the party, from every change that they were having between how to define the relations of revolutionary comradeship, they were all these like producing material. They were all these giving this ideological perspective that it was later serving for the rest of the societies and civil movement. So all this, what they were learning and they were developing new, and this new way of life, they were all trespassing it to the movement. So it was inspiring so many women in the 90s. Like also it was the first time in the 90s that appeared the first civil autonomous women's organizations, thanks to this perspective of the guerrilla. At the end of the 90s, they formed their party, their ideological cadre party, that it was like the autonomous party together with the PKK. This was a really huge step. And we can see like how they are developing through the practice, who they see that there is always a new step to be taken towards the liberation. And that's why they were like increasing their and developing more structures. Making bigger the area of action. And I want to say that in the 90s, at the end of the 90s, Öcalan got arrested by the Turkish Secret Services and the CIA, and this was a really difficult situation, but it made the woman stronger. They made them, and this is really important to say, because there were some people in the party that they were not accepting the woman's liberation line, and they were not accepting that the perspective inside the movement started to be like directed by a woman's liberation perspective. there was this reactionary, counter-revolutionary side still inside the own members of the party. And this is how these women, the Kurdish women, are telling us. And they said, we are going to do it, and we have to keep the autonomous structures, because with these autonomous structures, we are guaranteeing, this is a guarantee for this revolution. It's a guarantee that we are not going to reproduce again the system, that we are not going to fail. And we can see in the patriarchal behavior that the system of domination is being reproduced. So our guarantee for this revolution is going to be to keep always the autonomous woman's structures, to keep always this perspective, and being all the time like reflecting it in the general movement. And it has been like this, like they succeeded, and this all their side, reactionary side inside the party was defeated. And is the moment that also thanks to this experience of they created this autonomous party, they established really, like they saw with this example, that it was true, that this was the guarantee for a freedom, and real freedom, and for a real revolutionary future, and a possibility of really making the revolution. And this Öcalan is able to synthesize all this in the prison, to include this new perspective, and to rethink the paradigm, and finally give it a name with this new perspective. And then he proposes the democratic confederalism. And in this, it's really important to say that because the autonomous structures in the party, in the movement, until that time, like beginning of 2000, yeah, it has been accepted, but it was a kind of side work, like, for example, social work, but there's also, like, the class and so on. There's also, like, the woman's liberation work, then the woman then can work there, like the youth and so on. But since rethinking all what has happened in this democratic confederalist proposal is presented that the woman's liberation is just not another area of the movement, but is the strategy. And this is the change in this paradigm. This change of paradigm from a national liberation, typical national liberation perspective of creating a socialist state for Kurdish people, and to change it to a confederal state, is not the only one change in the paradigm, but it changes the completely perspective. It changes the strategy, and the strategy is the woman's liberation. It's a fight until the end against patriarchy. And this is something that is not acknowledged still from the outside. Like the people are staying in the economy, staying in the question of the nation state. It's not only that. It's like because we are fighting against patriarchy, therefore we are not going to create a nation state. So the woman's liberation is this. It's not a strategy. It's just not a decoration, or it's just not something else. And that's why since then on, the women were completely autonomous in all their work, in all the developments, and in the revolution, in the self-defense. And it's something that is not questioned anymore. It's the strategy. And this comes then to Rojava, and this comes to the revolution of Rojava. Like, these women were organizing in all the parts of Kurdistan. Rojava is the western part of Kurdistan. And since the beginning of 2005, when the democratic confederalism is announced in all the areas of Kurdistan, is formed the first confederal structure of women in the part of Rojava. And it's called Yekitiya Star, the Union Star, in honor of the goddess, of the Mesopotamian goddess Ishtar. And later, when the revolution of Rojava, this confederal structure of women will change its name to be Kongra Star, the Congress of the Woman Star. And so we can see that this is not something that appeared in 2014, not something that appeared even in 2011 with the civil war in Syria, but it has to do with this. And this civil society was getting this inspiration from this more than 30 years struggle from this woman, from all these martyrs, for the resistance of the woman in prison, and from a whole ideological and educational work that the party was doing with the society. Things that they were trespassing all the time, this to the society. It was not something new. was not something new for the society when in 2012 the democratic autonomy was proposed as a model against the Assad regime in Syria. So this is why it's so important. This is why they are everywhere, because they are this. They are leading the revolution. They are the strategy that through the women's liberation, all the society will be liberated. And overall, this is an ideology. It's not a question of physically just the woman be liberated and therefore everybody will be liberated, but it's a question of the mentality. That if everything that we do, that if all the struggle, we do it with a perspective, anti-patriarchal perspective, and the liberation of women, therefore we are going to really get to the core and of the domination, and we are going to be able to go to the highest level of freedom. And this is what they are bringing to us. And this, I think, is the why this revolution is so important. And that's why there's like hundreds, thousands of women of the whole world like looking at them and getting inspired.
Let's have a small break now and listen some music. Next song is called Sara, and it is performed by Avaze Gia, the voice of the mountains. The song is a praise of Sakine Skansis, one of the founding members of PKK. Sakine was known by name Sara, and her memoir is published in series of three books with the same name. She was assassinated in Paris with two other comrades in year 2013.
Jovel vejam yon kono zure Bu ekirmaje peşna Bu ye abdu kırmaje peşna Name avı
Name avıl Sakinaya
Sakinaya
Ticazerdi
Ticazerdi چوی بنا قصاص تر تر گنا
قصاص تر تر گنا
دشمن زب زب به دخت و دیگه جون ما مرا گره تو نو دشمن زب زب به دخت و دیگه جون ما مرا گره تو
ناجون مات دور بیر میکرد و زر مادی بیاز درد و اخ
ناجون مات دور بیر میکرد و زر مادی بیاز درد و
That was Avazen Chia. You are listening to Totuus Radio in Radio Moreni's frequency 98.4. This broadcast is called You Have Joined Women's Revolution, and we are talking about Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement with Heval Vian. While the word patriarchality was mentioned several times before music break, I asked Heval Vian tell more about this concept. What patriarchality means, or how Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement defines it?
Well, from the Kurdish women's movement, they have an own analysis of the meaning of patriarchy. And what they are saying is that a patriarchy is a system and overall a mental system that started and was systematized and established as a system more than 5,000 years ago, actually started in Mesopotamia. This is the interesting thing from them, no? Because they look at history, they go back to a moment in which societies and humans were living in a different way, in which the masculine dominated men and mentality were not established. And what they tell us, and you can see it there in Kurdistan, no, not the whole world is living like Europe in this capitalist neoliberal system. Like, looks like there is nothing communal, or like we have always lived like this in the States. No, like there is a lot of communities, there's a lot of people in the world living different. And especially there in Kurdistan, you can see very clear the remains of a different moment of history and of life, in the beliefs, in the culture, in the roles also, no? Even if I said before that, like, of course, the Kurdish society has been a society, peoples that has been colonialized, also ideologically, in the belief, physically, their territory. So therefore, also they have changed a lot, and they have a lot of patriarchal influence. But still there are things in the society, especially remaining in the woman, that we can trace for thousands of years ago, for a time that they call it Neolithic. And before the hierarchical states of domination, like we know them today, appear. And these states, for the first time, appear there 5,000 years ago with the Sumerians, with the Babylonians. And they analyze all this, and they try to understand under which patterns this appear, how this could happen. And they, like other feminists have also told us, no, they appear when the domination of the father, when the institutionalization of a male mentality is established. And this is really important to understand, no? Because an ideology is created, a different culture is imposed in a society. And this mentality, we can trace it, and we can see that it's a mentality that it gives a special position and legitimation of a domination to a part of the population, and this population are symbolizing the men. So it's created a special masculinity that is growing thanks to the oppression of the other part of the society, the woman. And from then on, everything that is not this male domination, like stereotype, is being used and is being oppressed. So this is how they understand patriarchy, is a system of rule, how masculinity domination, a really specific masculinity domination, a creation of new roles that is creating this division in the society and that is opening the path to any kind of any other of oppression. This is what they are telling us, like there is a moment in like this a new class called women are being the ones oppressed so the others can take their power. A power of control of population, a power of ideology and of knowledge. And this is being done over the control of communal economy based on a motherhood structure. It's done over the free sexuality of the women and of the ones being able to give birth. And it's also done on an ideology and a way of understanding the world that is centering the life, is putting the life on the center, the protection of the life. It's the moment 5,000 years ago that the profit, that the exploitation and that the individual power goes on the center. And then this is done really like putting down this new class of women. So it's the first division of classes in the society we can see is this one. It's the man, oppressor man, and the oppressed woman. And when I'm talking about this man oppressor and oppressed woman, I'm talking in an ideological way, that these classes are formed and therefore roles are formed. So it has nothing to do with the biology. It's not something of the nature. It's not the nature of the man to be oppressors. It's not the nature of the man to be oppressed. The men, women, and other identities before these identities were created like this were living in equality with these different roles and in different also positions in society, but it has not been a system never in thousands of years until this happened. Until these first states were created with a masculine mentality. It has never been developed a system of social cannibalism in the way that patriarchy has done it. So this says a lot. And from this, the society was divided. It was divided in the ones ruling, the ones knowing, the ones the slave ones working for this. So this is the understanding of patriarchy. It goes beyond just of a gender oppression. It's just not gender oppression. It's like it's talking about a system, a mentality in which the positions are modeled as the model to have the right to oppress others. And during history, we can see how this patriarchy concept has been added new characteristics and it has been making itself more perfect now for this domination. And we can talk now that this patriarchy is this system of oppression that is giving the right to the white, Western European, heterosexual, human man to oppress anything else that is not that. And the important thing here is to realize this, not that this first class created of oppressed was this woman class. And this is what they are telling us from the women's movement, is that if we don't break this, we don't understand this relation of oppression created in this, how you call it, in this classical relation of man or woman that is unnatural, we cannot understand any other oppression. So they are not saying that first is the gender struggle and then it's not like the conception of a woman's liberation, it goes to all this. Not that with this perspective, we can analyze the class oppression, we can analyze the racism, we can analyze the oppression on the nature. Like, it's the framework for that. And we have to do everything at the same time. This is all patriarchy. And the dominant masculinity is fascism. It's a capitalism who have not been able to impose itself without this. Patriarchy is giving the ideological framework to that. It will not be possible with this sexism. And it will not be possible with racism. So if we want to get rid of capitalism, we have to talk about patriarchy, we have to talk about gender oppression, we have to talk about race, we have to talk about colonialization, we have to talk about the exploitation of nature, because all this is connected. It's the same mentality that is legitimized power to a specific model to oppress the others. So until this concept we can extend patriarchy.
Will you leave or will you stay? Stars can be seen through you, coldest girl of midwinter. They did not believe that you would stand on your own feet. So goes the lyrics of the next song, performed by artist called Nihe. Song is called Chada, which means through. The lyrics are in Sapmi language, one of the 9 Sapmi languages spoken by Sapmi indigenous people in Sapmi land, which is located to the northern Europe, divided on the area of 4 states, Norway, Sweden, Finland and Russia. With this song, we can slow down a bit for a moment. Here is Nihe and Chada.
Eine Etuchala.